Chapter 16. Still men were without faith in the strike. When Daylight, with his heavy outfit of flour, arrived at the mouth of the Klondike, he found the big flat as desolate and tenantless as ever. Down close by the river, Chief Isaac and his Indians were camped beside the frames on which they were drying salmon. Several old-timers were also in camp there. Having finished their summer work on 10 Mile Creek, they had come down the Yukon, bound for Circle City. But at 60 Mile they had learned of the strike, and stopped off to look over the ground. They had just returned to their boat, when Daylight landed his flour, and their report was pessimistic. "Damned moose pasture," quoth one, Long Jim Harney, pausing to blow into his tin mug of tea. "And you have nothing to do with it, Daylight. It's a blamed rotten sell. They're just going through the motions of a strike. Harper and Latju's behind it, and Carmack's the stool pigeon. Whoever heard of mining a moose pasture half a mile between Rimrock and God alone knows how far to bedrock?" Daylight nodded sympathetically, and considered for a space. "Did you all pan any?" he asked finally. "Pan hell," was the indignant answer. "Think I was born yesterday. Only a chichaqua would fool around that pasture long enough to fill a pan of dirt. You don't catch me at any such foolishness. One look was enough for me. We're pulling on in the morning for Circle City. I ain't never had faith in this upper country. Head reaches of the Tanana is good enough for me from now on, and mark my words, when the big strike comes, she'll come down river. Johnny, here, staked a couple of miles below Discovery, but he don't know no better." Johnny looked shamefaced. "I just did it for fun," he explained. "D give my chance in the creek for a pound of star plug." "I'll go you," Daylight said promptly. "But don't you all come squealing if I take 20 or 30,000 out of it." Johnny grinned cheerfully. "Gim the tobacco," he said. "Wish I'd staked alongside," Long Jim murmured plaintively. "It ain't too late," Daylight replied. "But it's a 20-mile walk there and back." "I'll stake it for you tomorrow when I go up," Daylight offered. "Then you do the same as Johnny. Get the fees from Tim Logan. He's tending bar in the Sourdough, and he'll lend it to me. Then fill in your own name, transfer to me, and turn the papers over to Tim." "Me too," chimed in the third old-timer. And for 3 pounds of star plug chewing tobacco, Daylight bought outright 3 500-foot claims on Bonanza. He could still stake another claim in his own name, the others being merely transfers. "Must say you're almighty brash with your chewing tobacco," Long Jim grinned. "Odd a factory somewheres?" "Nope, but I got a hunch," was the retort, "and I tell you all it's cheaper than dirt to rider at the rate of 3 plugs for 3 claims. But an hour later, at his own camp, Joe Latju strode in, fresh from Bonanza Creek. At first, non-committal over Carmack's strike, then, later, dubious, he finally offered Daylight $100 for his share in the town site. "Cash?" Daylight queried. "Sure. There she is." So saying, Latju pulled out his gold sack. Daylight hefted it absent-mindedly, and, still absent-mindedly, untied the strings, and ran some of the gold dust out on his palm. It showed darker than any dust he had ever seen, with the exception of Carmack's. He ran the gold back tied the mouth of the sack, and returned it to Latju. "I guess you all need it more than I do," was Daylight's comment. "Nope. Got plenty more," the other assured him. "Where that come from?" Daylight was all innocence as he asked the question, and Latju received the question as stolidly as an Indian. Yet for a swift instant they looked into each other's eyes, and in that instant an intangible something seemed to flash out from all the body and spirit of Joe Latju. And it seemed to Daylight that he had caught this flash, sensed a secret something in the knowledge, and plans behind the other's eyes. "You all know the creek better'n me," Daylight went on. "And if my share in the town site's worth $100 to you all with what you all know, it's worth $100 to me, whether I know it or not. I'll give you 300, Laju offered desperately. Still the same reasoning. No matter what I don't know, it's worth to me, whatever you all are willing to pay for it. Then it was that Joe Laju shamelessly gave over. He led Daylight away from the camp and men, and told him things in confidence. She's sure there, he said in conclusion. Didn't sluice it, or cradle it. I panned it, all in that sack, yesterday, on the Rim Rock. I tell you, you can shake it out of the grassroots. And what's on bedrock down in the bottom of the creek they ain't no way of telling. But she's big, I tell you, big. Keep it quiet, and locate all you can. It's in spots, but I wouldn't be none surprised if some of them claims yielded as high as 50,000. The only trouble is that it's spotted. A month passed by, and Bonanza Creek remained quiet. A sprinkling of men had staked, but most of them, after staking, had gone on down to 40 Mile and Circle City. The few that possessed sufficient faith to remain were busy building log cabins against the coming of winter. Carmack and his Indian relatives were occupied in building a sluice box and getting ahead of water. The work was slow, for they had to saw their lumber by hand from the standing forest. But farther down Bonanza were four men who had drifted in from upriver, Dan McGilvery, Dave McKay, Dave Edwards, and Harry Waugh. They were a quiet party, neither asking nor giving confidences, and they herded by themselves. But Daylight, who had panned the spotted rim of Carmack's claim, and shaken coarse gold from the grassroots, and who had panned the rim at 100 other places up and down the length of the creek and found nothing, was curious to know what lay on bedrock. He had noted the four quiet men sinking a shaft close by the stream, and he had heard their whipsaw going as they made lumber for the sluice boxes. He did not wait for an invitation, but he was present the first day they sluiced. And at the end of 5 hours shoveling for one man, he saw them take out 13 ounces and a half of gold. It was coarse gold, running from pinheads to a $12 nugget, and it had come from off bedrock. The first fall snow was flying that day, and the Arctic winter was closing down. But Daylight had no eyes for the bleak gray sadness of the dying, short-lived summer. He saw his vision coming true, and on the big flat was upreared anew his golden city of the snows. Gold had been found on bedrock. That was the big thing. Carmack's strike was assured. Daylight staked a claim in his own name adjoining the three he had purchased with his plug tobacco. This gave him a block of property 2,000 feet long and extending in width from Rim Rock to Rim Rock. Returning that night to his camp at the mouth of Klondike, he found in it, the Indian he had left at Daya. Was traveling by canoe, bringing in the last mail of the year. In his possession was some $200 in gold dust, which Daylight immediately borrowed. In return, he arranged to stake a claim for him, which he was to record when he passed through 40 Mile. When Kama departed next morning, he carried a number of letters for Daylight, addressed to all the old-timers downriver, in which they were urged to come up immediately and stake. Also Kama carried letters of similar import, given him by the other men on Bonanza. It will sure be the gosh dangdest stampede that ever was, Daylight chuckled, as he tried to vision the excited populations of 40 Mile and Circle City tumbling in two poling boats and racing the hundreds of miles up the Yukon, for he knew that his word would be unquestioningly accepted. With the arrival of the first stampeders, Bonanza Creek woke up, and thereupon began a long-distance race between unveracity and truth, wherein, lie no matter how fast, men were continually overtaken and passed by truth. When men who doubted Carmack's report of 2.5 to the pan, themselves panned 2.5, they lied and said that they were getting an ounce. And long ere the lie was fairly on its way, they were getting not 1 ounce but 5 ounces. This they claimed was 10 ounces, but when they filled a pan of dirt to prove the lie, they washed out 12 ounces. And so it went. They continued valiantly to lie, but the truth continued to outrun them. One day in December, daylight filled a pan from bedrock on his own claim and carried it into his cabin. Here a fire burned and enabled him to keep water unfrozen in a canvas tank. He squatted over the tank and began to wash. Earth and gravel seemed to fill the pan. As he imparted to it a circular movement, the lighter, coarser particles washed out over the edge. At times he combed the surface with his fingers, raking out handfuls of gravel. The contents of the pan diminished. As it drew near to the bottom, for the purpose of fleeting and tentative examination, he gave the pan a sudden sloshing movement, emptying it of water. And the whole bottom showed, as if covered with butter. Thus the yellow gold flashed up as the muddy water was flirted away. It was gold, gold dust, coarse gold, nuggets, large nuggets. He was all alone. He set the pan down for a moment and thought long thoughts. Then he finished the washing and weighed the result in his scales. At the rate of $16 to the ounce, the pan had contained $700-odd. It was beyond anything that even he had dreamed. His fondest anticipations had gone no farther than $20,000 or $30,000 to a claim, but here were claims worth $500,000 each at the least, even if they were spotted. He did not go back to work in the shaft that day, nor the next, nor the next. Instead, capped and mittened, a light stampeding outfit, including his rabbit skin robe, strapped on his back, he was out and away on a many days tramp over creeks and divides, inspecting the whole neighboring territory. On each creek he was entitled to locate one claim, but he was chary in thus surrendering up his chances. On Hunker Creek only did he stake a claim. Bonanza Creek he found staked from mouth to source, while every little draw and pup and gulch that drained into it was likewise staked. Little faith was had in these side streams. They had been staked by the hundreds of men who had failed to get in on Bonanza. The most popular of these creeks was Adams. The one least fancied was El Dorado, which flowed into Bonanza, just above Carmack's Discovery claim. Even Daylight disliked the looks of El Dorado. But, still riding his hunch, he bought a half share in one claim on it for half a sack of flour. A month later he paid $800 for the adjoining claim. 3 months later, enlarging this block of property, he paid $40,000 for a third claim. And, though it was concealed in the future, he was destined, not long after, to pay $150,000 for a fourth claim on the creek that had been the least liked of all the creeks. In the meantime, and from the day he washed $700 from a single pan and squatted over it, and thought a long thought, he never again touched hand to pick and shovel. As he said to Joe Laju the night of that wonderful washing, "Joe, I ain't never going to work hard again. Here's where I begin to use my brains. I'm going to farm gold. Gold will grow gold if you all have the savvy and can get hold of some for seed." When I seen them $700 in the bottom of the pan, I knew I had the seed at last. "Where are you going to plant it?" Joe Laju had asked. And Daylight, with a wave of his hand, definitely indicated the whole landscape and the creeks that lay beyond the divides. "There she is," he said, "and you all just watch my smoke. There's millions here for the man who can see them. And I seen all the millions this afternoon, when them $700 peeped up at me from the bottom of the pan and chirruped, 'Well, if here ain't Burning Daylight come at last.'" Apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.